Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, Talking Hockey on June the 9th, 2019. The only thing better would be Talking Hockey on Wednesday, June the 12th, day of a Game 7. It's Game 6 Sunday. Ken Laird here. Pete Blackburn, CBS, is here. Matt Kalman is on his way to the airport. We'll see if, against all odds, he gets to St. Louis without delay. Supposedly a direct flight, which is a shocker. Thank you, Entercom, and we'll see if Kalman can, beyond further expectations, have a good call in post-game, Pete. I'm not sure that's possible.
Doubt it.
We'll see. We'll see if he has early key calling from Kalman after game two. After game two? I believe it was after the overtime loss. Everything going to be all right. That was the Matt Kalman piece after the Gunnarsson overtime goal. 3-2, which evened up the series at one game apiece. He got slaughtered for that on Mutt and Callahan and other shows.
Right.
We gave him the business here on this program. I think his overall sentiment was, because at that point, the top guns had not been firing. Pasternak, Marchand, Bergeron, Krejci, the usual names.
Right.
I had talked to Krug at the Garden after that game, and Krug basically, we played the clip, I think, that Sunday skate as well. He said, this has happened before. Our top guys, sometimes it takes a while to get going. They'll figure it out. They'll get loose. And the next game, 7-2, four power play goals. Bergeron had the beautiful power play goal in the first period. That one won the faceoff, the deflection goal, and it felt, although we did discuss that, right?
I told you on the show.
Yes.
It's all that production came on the power play. There's not a lot of reason to say they've got it going because it all came on the power play.
For the most part, you're right. Like, obviously they scored seven in that game. Coyle had a great goal also in the first period, like a 200-foot play. Went back behind his own goal line, back-checked. He and Johansson connected. Corrali had a nice goal. Pasternak scored early in the second. So, yes, you're right. When you're talking about just the first line, it wasn't clear evidence that they had turned it around, but everybody was contributing, and they're rolling 7-2. And pretty much the Blues were buried in this town after that game.
Right.
Except by Pete Blackburn.
But, I mean, both games that they won came from the strength of special teams and the depth.
Right. And what changed? And, oh, by the way, that's a win in St. Louis where you had all the pregame fanfare with Layla and you had Brett Hull with the Let's Go Blues. I mean, it was an unbelievable first 10 minutes and an atmosphere at Enterprise Center, and Boston just totally kicked their ass, and so that led into the feeling of, you know, you're halfway home and you're feeling awfully good about this series.
Yep.
So what changed? Well, Craig Berube worked the refs. We just heard Paul Stewart there a little bit, if you caught the back end of the 6 a.m. hour on the replay of Dalen Keefe, former NFL official. He does not want to hear that something said in the media could affect on-ice officials. This coming from a former on-ice official who says, you don't understand, Keefe. You're not there. The coaches talk with the refs every day, during a playoff run, and particularly the cup finals. They make their case about what was missed, what was not missed. I'm sure that's true. I'm sure Paul Stewart's right about that. But don't you think if Berube was that active in the media, he's been working these guys even harder behind the scenes?
I mean, he can say whatever he wants, but the evidence is clear as day. The officiating change in the series after Craig Berube made his comments. It's not even the proof is in the pudding. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous how much the officiating shifted.
Because after that, the game four, I believe the Bruins had two power plays. I can't remember necessarily one that was like egregiously missed in that game. I don't know if you do, but it was just a sense of they're letting them play.
Well, it was in game four. It was more of a case of St. Louis getting power plays that they didn't deserve. It was the Tarasenko flop clearly,
which I gotta say, I bought that one in real time. Like watching it, I thought, okay, he got clipped.
Sure, I mean, you throw your head back, that's a call most of the time. And then the trip on Steen was the Heinen penalty, which was ridiculous.
Right.
And then in game five, it was a case of obviously them not calling things that the Bruins deserved.
Game five was an atrocity, and we'll get there. And obviously, Ivan Barbashev got suspended for one game by the NHL Department of Player Safety. So it was not just
two suspensions in the series that resulted in a total of two penalty minutes.
That's ridiculous. True. And actually, that's the other thing that has swung the series when you think about it. That was the Grizzly hit from Sundquist, and that came in game two now. This was before the politicking and before the Bruins took a 2-1 lead in the series. So the Blues won that game 3-2, but they not only controlled the last, I would say, the last third period at overtime. There was a sense of in the building, they're taking over this game, right? This is like, uh-oh, St. Louis. Now we're seeing St. Louis, when they get going, 5-on-5,
It felt like a win that the Bruins had gotten to overtime in the first place, and then when overtime rolled around, they just got absolutely steamrolled.
Right, and I do think there was a good chance maybe late in the game by Bergeron, thinking back on that, it was like Bergeron and Pasternak had a chance to maybe steal one. But Gunnarsson hit a post, too, and then, of course, Gunnarsson put it in, so it was over. And after the game, Grizzlick's out, and Tuukka had been run a couple times in that game as well, so we were asking some of the players about whether they felt this was a tactic, an intentional tactic, and nobody was really buying into that. But it was the start of seeing St. Louis for who they were. They're a big physical team that's going to go after small defensemen on the Bruins, Grizzlick one of them, and as we've seen in previous series, just the attrition. San Jose had nobody left by the time Game 6 came around. As you predicted in that series, St. Louis was going to win. The cream was going to rise to the top. So here we are, the morning of Game 6, after all this. And Game 6 in St. Louis doesn't sound good. On one hand, the Blues have been very mediocre at home. On the other hand, they've closed out all three series at home. On the other hand, they've lost Barbashev, but we saw them lose Sundquist, and they bounced back, and actually, in some kind of an odd way, it forced them to put Zach Sanford into the lineup, who's been kind of a savior for them.
Yeah.
He's with Ryan O'Reilly. They've changed some things. So they've adjusted from already a suspension in this series, and they dropped Sammy Blais down.
But I will say that the game that they lost Sundquist, they got rolled.
The
He's
first
a big,
game
big
without.
Part,
that's right.
Big part of that fourth line. And
that was
Barbashev
the 7-2
is too,
game.
So... that fourth line has been huge for the Blues. Losing Barbashev is no small thing.
In 2011, the Bruins came back from a 3-2 deficit to the Canucks. Obviously, different scenario. That game six was in Boston, and you forced it and went back for a wild scene in Vancouver. This has also a similar feeling, though, to the Blackhawks series in 2013 in some ways, because in that one you had a 2-1 lead, and Bergeron got hurt, and so you're losing bodies. Chara is... not hurt. He's going to play, but obviously he's going to be limited here. So you got all these things juggling around in your head here on a game six morning, plus the officiating and everything that's been politicked here in the last couple of days. So just in general, what's the Pete Blackburn mood here on game six morning?
I mean, you clearly are not feeling great given the way that the series has played out over the past couple of games. And,
and this despite you partying all day yesterday with DJ Bean and like pictures all over social media, and you got it out of your system, right? I mean,
I did. Yeah, I got my my celebration out. But I mean, it's a weird feeling because your top players are not producing. That makes you feel bad, but also you have to recognize the fact this series can turn on a dime if those top players produce, because the Bruins are outplaying St. Louis in some areas. I mean, you look at goaltending, I think the Bruins still have the advantage there. I'm not crazy about Jordan Binnington. Special teams are obviously in the Bruins' favor if they actually get some damn calls. But I think that if you start getting some production out of that top six, this series can be yours, but you need that production.
You do need the production, and they got it in Game 6 against the Leafs, right? I mean, that was another, if you want to compare to being down 3-2, well, in a more recent example, that was looking somewhat dire going
right. We were on the show.
Up there, Game 6.
We were on the show saying this season is a waste. Johansson's deadwood.
Right.
And so, I mean, that series flipped.
And then they rolled over the Leafs in Game 7, thanks to some soft goals early, Dermott with the mistake. And, the Toronto has their issues.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get those gifts.
I don't think you're going to get those kind of gifts here. But the point is, the Bruins, when pushed down 3-2, the leadership in that room never flinched. They went up and played one of their best games of the playoffs at Game 6. I think they even fell behind 1-0 in the game. And I forget the particulars of that Game 6 now. But anyway, It was by the end of it, they played a great road game and came back and won the series. So I'm not saying they're out. Grizzlick and his status yesterday. Non-contact red jersey, not cleared from the concussion. So they've lost two games since he's been out, and really lost three games because he barely played in game two. So they were playing with 5D in that second game. So it kind of the war of attrition caught up with them in game there as well a little bit, if you want to make an excuse there. So they're really 1-3 here without Matt Grizzlick. How important is he, and do you think there's a chance he plays even though he didn't participate in the practice yesterday?
Seems unlikely, but, I mean, he is important, but you also look at the fact that two of the games that they lost in the series, they were down to five defensemen, and I think that's a big factor, and that's why I like the fact that they dressed 7D in game five. I doubt it happens again, maybe. But
Cassidy was asked about that, and he basically said it's not our style, to paraphrase. Like, I got the sense he's not going to do 7D again, right?
Yeah, I think that it was insurance for Chara. If Chara couldn't really play, they throw him out there, and he can't really go. You got an insurance defenseman. I don't think it happens again because Chara clearly can play.
He can play. I mean, clearly, the start of the third period, he's late coming onto the bench, and there was like, uh-oh, something's going on here, So to your point, the insurance was a real thing. They sort of needed it there just to make sure, by the third period, the guy could breathe.
Right, and I mean, it wasn't like pulling Backus out of the lineup was, you're not losing a ton there. And so, I mean, if you double shift Pasternak, then it is what it is. And it obviously, I think that was the smart move from Cassidy. I'm glad that he made it. I don't know if it happens again, but I mean, losing Grizzlick was obviously big. He's a big depth defenseman. He's been good for this team all year long. And at this point, the fact that he was still non-contact is a bit concerning. I don't think that it's worth banking on him playing in game six.
Well, if he doesn't play and if Chara is totally healthy, then they're just back to Chara and McAvoy, Krug and Carlo, and John Moore plays with Connor Clifton. So you're playing with 6D and you're expecting them to
carry the weight
for the whole game, and you're back to 12 forwards. If you believed 7D though was the right call for the last game, why don't you think it worked in the last game, or does it get them out of
I think it was a Chara thing. It was you don't know if Chara is going to be able to play. And heading into that game, it was worth carrying the extra insurance if he was not able to go or if something happened to him in that game. So,
but if Backus stinks and is insignificant, then what's the point of putting him back in, I guess?
Well, I think that they have to shift the lines, period. I really think that for as good as that third line has been, I would love to see them break them up and stack the top six because, you stick Coyle on that first line, Johansson on the second line, and just really run those guys into the ground because you need production on the top six, and I think that it's worth breaking up the third line, which has been really good. It's worth breaking them up to say, if we're going to lose, we're going to go down swinging with the top six, trying to get as much out of them as we can.
Wow, so you're saying you'd put Coyle on
with Bergeron and Marchand.
Marchand, Bergeron, Coyle.
Yeah.
Pasternak dumps down, but not only that, DeBrusk's out. And you put Johansson, Krejci, and
Pasternak.
And Pasternak?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a drastic change.
I mean, you have to. I mean, well, I don't say you have to, but I mean, there needs to be something that gets switched up because you're not getting the production out of the top six. You need to make a drastic change because you're not going to win this series without any top six production.
Then you're left with, and I guess these guys don't even play much for you, DeBrusk, Heinen, Backus, who centers your third line? You just said you basically play Backus. The fourth line as the third line and don't play the rest are just random parts that are on the bench.
Yeah, I think you run the top six into the ground.
That's not going to happen, though. It's a bold idea. I like your outside-the-box thinking. Do you think Cassidy would consider that?
I mean,
he put Coyle up there for a shift, so it's not like
I don't think it's out of the question, but, I mean, it seems like it probably won't happen, but that's what I think they should do.
All right, so Pete Blackburn is suggesting here at 7:14 a.m. on Sunday Skate a total rework of the top six, and basically he's saying roll two lines for the entire game.
I would do it.
That's unbelievable. So Marchand, Bergeron, and Coyle is your new top line. Pasternak's out. This is why I liked the 7D. I liked seeing more Pasternak with Krejci. I've liked that all along. I think those guys have pretty good chemistry. Now, they didn't score. Krejci still hasn't scored a 5-on-5 goal in the series. But they had some chances. I felt like for the first time in the series, they were a little more alive. So I don't hate that. DeBrusk did score a goal for you, but it was sort of
so
fluky.
Bad for the rest of the
game. He has looked bad. And he's been stripped off the top power play, by the way,
right?
In favor of Johansson. So that's a change that I think Armad Kalman suggested on our podcast we did Friday, and it's an obvious one. But, you know, it's you have to do it, right? Because you got to, I mean, Johansson's going to help you get in the zone and get set up. So they're making some changes.
Johansson's looked like their best forward in this
He
series.
Has. I mean, he has. But now he and Coyle have had chemistry together, so are you concerned about breaking those two up? Is that the tandem that, you know, should you just play Johansson and Coyle? If that's your best line in the series, don't mess with what's working. Give them some extra help. Get Heinen off their line.
But they haven't been good enough to win you games.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they've been really good, and it does worry me to break them up, but... both of those guys have been good individually, so I like giving them to the top six and then running those guys into the ground.
I wouldn't go that drastic. I'd just rather see Carson Coleman in there if you're going to go 12. Now, he hasn't played in a while. Backus, I don't know where his head is. There is the emotional factor of him going back to St. Louis, I guess, and maybe he sparks you in that building where he played all those years. So maybe there's a sentimentality there, or is he just breathing fire after getting benched in Game 5? They showed the one shot of him up in the press box, and I'm thinking, what is going through his head right now? So Cassidy had the balls to bench me in a cup final game against St. Louis. Are you kidding me?
That was a ballsy, gutsy move, because we were talking about it and we were wondering if he had the chutzpah to actually do that.
Yeah.
And to pull him out of the lineup. And again, I like the move. I think that it was a very, very smart decision. But, you know, how many times are we going to talk about what David Backus gives to the lineup if he's inserted back in after being scratched? I mean,
yeah, he's at best like a pincushion. He takes some shots and distracts away from the play,
right.
or he just doesn't.
I don't think
he doesn't
Coleman's
have
the answer either. I think, I mean,
a Coleman is the answer. See, this is what
yes,
you did.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Carson Coleman turns the cup final in Game 6.
Oh, God, no. I mean,
but he does bring a speed factor. I know that's like it's a cliche. They're a heavy team. You need to beat physicality with speed, but I do think there's something to that.
Where do you stick him,
Grizzly guy? I put him on Krejci's wing, I guess. Yeah. I wouldn't play him much. I would still double shift Pasternak, to be honest. Maybe not as much as you did in Game 5. So he plays with Krejci some, and then Coleman comes in. And the 10 minutes he gives you will be better than the 10 minutes Backus would give you.
I would honestly, I mean, if you're going to double shift anybody, I think it should be Johansson. Yeah, rather than Pasternak.
Well, in that sense, maybe just Johansson and Coyle get more shifts. The other problem is the fourth line's been awful good, for most of the playoffs, except, as you point out, during the Leafs series going into Game 6, we basically said the fourth line wasn't good enough.
They also got absolutely steamrolled in Game 4 against the Blues' fourth line. Got dominated.
Well, and that's the interesting part, too. Now, this series, switching back to St. Louis, the fourth line, whatever is left of it, because Barbashev is out, when the games have been in St. Louis, that matchup for Berube has been put the fourth line out against Bergeron. He's wanted that matchup, and he's gotten it, and they've done a pretty good job. And it's not just them, of course. It's obviously Parayko and Bouwmeester who are out there with them at all times as well. So, but let's say that's the case. If he's putting his fourth line out against the Bergeron line, now Corrali goes, are they out there against Shen, Schwartz, and Tarasenko? What's your matchup there? Do you concern yourself with that, and still try to keep this a 2-1 road type of game? Or are you not worried about matchups at all if you're Bruce Cassidy? Because it appears he has not been worried about matchups.
Yeah,
in this series.
I mean, I don't think matchups don't particularly worry me, because these are two teams that can and will roll four lines, and I think that you just have to worry about getting production out of your guys, because they haven't done it. And I mean, it doesn't really matter who you're going up against. It's going to be a tough opponent, tough matchup. That fourth line is difficult. But I think that losing Barbashev is pretty significant for that fourth line, no matter who slots in, because that fourth line has been really, really good for the Blues in the last two series.
Yeah, I would agree. That's something else to hang your hat on this morning. I would think, as you pointed out, they lost the other game when Sundqvist was hurt or suspended. The Bruins rolled in that game 7-2 on the road, despite the atmosphere. And so maybe it's the same thing. Maybe, you know, losing one part of this machine for St. Louis is enough to throw them off kilter to force a Game 7. So I do think that's a real possibility tonight. But the matchup that I just would like to see Cassidy try to get away from, and I don't know why he doesn't, is Bergeron against Parayko. Bergeron and Marchand against Parayko. Now, it's hard to do. I mean, those guys are out there a ton. He's basically playing like 5D. But wouldn't you, if Bortuzzo or Vince Dunn is playing tonight, or even Gunnarsson, wouldn't you rather see Marchand get a couple shifts against those guys? Yeah. And it almost never happens. So can't you, like, quick shift or you know, throw him out there on a faceoff, get him off the ice quick? It just doesn't seem like Cassidy worries himself with that at all.
Yeah,
and when you're sitting here with a five-game sample, when your top line has no goals 5-on-5, you would think that would be a concern.
Yeah, well, I mean, you certainly want to get them going in any way that you can do it. So I think that if you can get a matchup or a couple shifts against away from Parayko, and to his credit, Bomeister's looked better than I expected.
Much better than I expected.
Yeah, and I mean, I came on before.
I thought he was dead.
That's what I said. I said before the series, I thought they were going to expose him, and I thought that was a big big advantage for the Bruins, and they haven't been able to do that. But
the only guy that got exposed was Edmondson, and he's been pulled from the series. I mean, Berube has done a really nice job of recognizing what's not working and making the changes.
I think Cassidy's been outcoached, no question.
Totally agree.
So, you know, but going back to your point, I do think that you want to get a shift or two against you know, a favorable matchup against that top line, just to see if you can get them going.
Just now and then. I mean, you don't have to overreact, you know, to the point where your whole game plan is, you know, being thrown out of whack. But you know, a shift or two, yeah, every now and then, just to throw a curveball in there and get those guys going, I would think that makes some sense. But bottom line, Pete Blackburn is proposing drastic changes here this morning. He wants to roll two lines and load up Johansson and Coyle, spread out the wealth on lines 1 and 2. Do you agree? 617-779-7937. Talking some line juggling and combinations here on a Stanley Cup Final Game 6 morning. I would just rather see Kuhlman in and Backes out. And I think we're both of the mindset now that 6D is probably what's going to happen tonight. He's not going to go with 7D. Chara is ready to go. Coming up, we will hear from Zdeno Chara speak to the media yesterday. He and Tuukka were trotted out and put at podiums out in Enterprise Center, and Chara gave, John Anderson, about 2-3 minutes of talking through clenched teeth?
Yeah, he didn't sound too happy, but he also wasn't moving his mouth very much, so that's probably why.
Well, there were questions being peppered at him, and the visual, if you watch, is Tuukka, like, putting his hand over his face, like, he's so uncomfortable that Chara has to answer these questions, and that the media is asking him how he's feeling, and his jaw broken. And
yeah, Chara literally just looks like an angry Eastern European man. Just the exactly what you picture is what he looked like.
And Tuukka, who has been, like, totally stoic, like, they show those pregame clips of Tuukka Rask in the spotlight at the Garden, he doesn't flinch. He looks like
he doesn't look like he enjoyed a second of this playoff run.
No, nor does he look like he's even aware that he's in a stadium right. with 17,000 people. I used to love on ESPN. I don't know if you used to watch the old hits with John Clayton, where they would have him on like this screen, and Clayton would have this amazing ability. They would ask him a question, he'd answer it, and then his face would freeze, and he would just kind of sit there, and like his mouth would like it would be stuck in the same position of the last word that was out of his mouth, and he would just not move for like 5 seconds. That's like Tuukka on the ice. They show him, and he just does not move. He just stands there. So he's not been like emotionally phased at all.
Nope.
The only time he's been emotionally phased is this press conference with Chara, where they're asking Chara questions, and he's like totally uncomfortable and rubbing his face up and down. And he says, and Chara will not say that he has a broken jaw. He barely can say anything, but it is must-listen-to audio, so we're going to play that coming up for you next. And we have to, of course, talk about the officiating, the state of officiating in the NHL. As we get going here on Sunday Skate, we're with you only until 9 this morning. Our third man, Matt Calvin, is at Logan. He's going to be checking in, I think, at 8:30, provided he gets through security. He'll get his last words on the series. We want your thoughts as well, 617-779-7937. First, a trending here on Sports Radio WEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Anything with Matt Grzelcyk and how he's progressing?
He's not, hasn't been medically cleared, so he's still in a red.
Okay, and I know at this time of year, all out possibilities of what have you guys want to do, whatever it takes. A guy like Chris Wagner, who just took the ice a few minutes ago, any possibility of someone like him?
Tomorrow, doubtful. I'll put it there. I guess they could wake up in the morning, they could tell me he's got a chance, but I have not got that news yet. So I doubt he'd play. Game 7, potentially, with the 3 extra days, could be a possibility, but I doubt he'd play.
So there's Bruce Cassidy at Enterprise Center yesterday, the quick silence of the question about Matt Grzelcyk. But I'm not ruling him out today. I want to see the game day skate. He doesn't need a day before practice. If he's good to go, if he's clear today, I think he goes. Concussions, obviously nothing. Concussions, nothing to mess with, Pete. So if he's feeling symptoms and he's not cleared, I'm sure it's for a reason, right? He's obviously having some brain issues, and that's scary in and of itself. It's sure how severe that hit was.
Yeah, you don't want to rush him back. I think that he's important, but not that important to rush him back from a concussion. So I don't think that he plays. You can stand in your corner and say that you're holding out hope, but I doubt it. Honestly.
I'm hearing that, I doubt it as well. Now, Chris Wagner, I had kind of forgotten about. Their fourth line has been pretty solid without him. So Nordstrom, Corrali, Achari, and then you throw Wagner into the mix. Would they then bench Achari if Wagner's healthy and put him back into that trio? Or at this point, he's saying probably not Game 6. That would be tough to see it for Game 7 as well. But who knows? He's another piece to choose from, so keep that in mind. But the bigger story is Zdeno Chara. I think it's a bigger story. He played over 16 minutes. I thought maybe you'd get 4 to 10 at most out of him, mostly PK time. They well surpassed that. He was a minus one, if you plus minus, nobody uses anymore. But anyway, he was on the ice for the one goal against the O'Reilly goal, the Sanford pass. Did you give Chara any criticism for that? Because there was some thought that, he's got the front of the net and he decided to go behind the net and seal off the wraparound. So he made a choice and then abandoned the front of the net. But, the way I look at it, McAvoy just had a pass go through his legs, so that can't happen.
Right. Yeah, no, I thought that they the defense as a whole, I thought they played well. I mean, it's hard to hold that goal against them. I mean, it was a really nice play in the pass. It's a nice play from the Blues. And I thought overall the Bruins defense looked good. And especially Chara played more than I expected him to. I thought you said 4 to 10?
I thought, 4 to 10 minutes.
I thought like 10 to 12. And he obviously surpassed that. And so,
because I thought there was a chance he would just play on the PK. Like he plays 3 or 4 minutes of shorthanded time, and that's it.
Yeah. No, I mean, he looked good, not noticeable in terms of that injury affecting him.
I mean, 10 seconds in, he tries to hit Chen, right. at the board and get the reverse hit and everything else. So he's obviously trying to prove a point. Right. And from there, it's like, okay, let's go.
Right. And so I think that's why you go back to 6D, because he's clearly good enough to play those minutes. And you put a forward back in the lineup. So, I think overall it's tough to blame either of those goals on the Bruins defense in game 5. You obviously, that one goal was a nice play. And then the second one, I mean, we'll talk about it, but it was clearly a gift.
Gift from the gods. Now, here's Chara yesterday at the podium, which is awesome that he went out there and tried to speak. I'm going to trust Christian Fourier's reporting. I think he has a broken jaw. I think that was pretty evident. It was either I don't know what else it could have been.
Right.
It could have been a concussion, I guess.
I mean, so credit to Fourier for having it first, but I mean, what else was it going to be?
It could have been a concussion. He took it took a shot to the jaw, so maybe he was in protocol. I guess that would be the only other thing that I could think. So in the third period, he came back and. But if that, honestly, if that was the case, I'm not even sure they would let a guy back on the bench if he's concussed. right. just to sit there. Is that? I'm not even sure that's ever happened. Well, normally, if you're in concussion protocol, you're just off the ice. You pull it off the ice. So probably not. But anyway, let's throw Fourier a bone. He's had a tough week. I'm going to say it's a broken jaw. Now, Chara wouldn't admit that, but here we go. 2 minutes of Zdeno Chara speaking or attempting to speak with a broken jaw. Reporters asking him questions yesterday.
Zdeno, I was wondering if you could just walk us through how you felt playing in the last game, and also, is your jaw broken?
I feel fine playing. Obviously, it was a quick turnaround after last game here, but I feel fine.
What are your limitations in terms of kind of just that the pain tolerance you're going through and just kind of what you can't do out there because of the injury?
I don't think there's no limitations. I'm still able to play.
Zdeno, are you able to eat food properly now, or what's the challenge there to get yourself ready?
Yeah, I'm trying to always eat as much as I can you know, keep my nutrition up and fluids up.
Question for both you guys. Are you expecting, or is Butch the kind of coach to come in a game before game six and kind of give some kind of motivational speech, or is it simply just put on the players and to know what is at stake here?
Well, I think that before every game we have meetings and we talk about, you know, what we want to do and how we want to play, and it's pretty obvious it's a big game, but I think it's going to be, you know, shared responsibility between players, coaching staff, and all of us to do the share of talking and make sure that we are where we need to be and, you know, the right mindset and preparation before the game. But I don't think it's just a specific, you know, speech or just a player that has to, you know, do all the talking. You know, I think we've been really good as a team the whole season to talk before the games, and you know, just a you know, preparation as usual.
Same.
So Tuukka gives the one word answer.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, when you ask a question from both those guys, Tuukka's
that never works, by the way. For both you guys, that's always awkward and uncomfortable.
But I mean, bad teammate from Tuukka.
Terrible
there. Not taking the mic to answer that question.
Right, you got to grab the mic first there. I thought the same thing. What a dirtbag move from Tuukka. All right, now, so a couple things there. First of all, he feels fine. No limitations. It's something.
There's no limitations.
Doesn't sound like there's no limitations.
Yeah, seriously.
It's somebody pointed out, it's like that Monty Python scene with the black knight who's got his legs and arms cut off, and he's talking about
the flesh wound.
So, no limitations. Then he says, he's asked about the pregame speech. I think he said there, it's a shared responsibility. We all have to talk. He actually said we all have to talk and share the responsibility of speaking before the game tonight. So,
shot at Tuukka.
Another right. shot at Tuukka. But so if you're actually in the room there, do you want Zdeno Chara getting up in front of you and trying to give you that? I don't know if he has ever done that anyway. Like if you're putting the pads on, you're putting on the foil, and here comes Chara, he's gonna.
I felt very uncomfortable listening to him talk right there for 2 minutes. So I don't know if he's the guy that you want standing up to give the rah rah speech in the locker room before the game. I don't think that's gonna get the guys going.
I'm hoping Cassidy takes a little more of those reins tonight, and Tuukka, but you know. Can you eat food properly is a
great question.
Quality question. Can you? I think the obvious answer is yes, absolutely. He's eating food properly, but yeah, the fact that he actually said "yeah" is great. 5-star. So this has not worked out like the Curt Schilling bloody sock initially.
I would love for somebody to ask him that question like before next season, and just be like, out of context. Hey, can you eat food properly? Sure. Why not?
I think that was the one where Tuukka, if you see it's just that the hand is over the face. He's incredulous at the question coming in. It's got to be motivating from some point, though. I would think, you know, if you're just on the team, here's your captain. He's going through this. He's obviously going to extremes to come out and talk to the press through a broken jaw. You're going to – motivation shouldn't be a factor tonight. It's just
motivation would have came before last game. And, you know, I thought that it was a really great moment before the game when the crowd gave him that ovation. It was huge. And, you know, if any motivation was coming, it was going to be before that game. And, you know, maybe it did, but clearly didn't work out in terms of, you know, pushing them over the top.
Now, if the officials had called the hit on Barbashev 5 minutes into the game, and you got a guy with a five-minute major, which in hindsight, it should be, right? It should have been a five-minute major, and the guy should be, you know, a game misconduct. And they don't call anything. Now, they did get a penalty on Dunn for delay of game shortly thereafter, so they had a power play chance, and they kind of blew that. That's in the first 7 minutes of the
Although,
contest.
I mean, we know from the McAvoy hit, illegal hit to the head, doesn't have a five-minute classification unless you think that there was intent to injure.
Well, could they have called elbowing, I guess, or yeah, that's a good point.
It should have been at least two. That's a thing. I mean, you have two suspensions in this series with a total of 2 minutes, which is insane.
So we'll talk about the officiating. That's obviously the main storyline. Was kind of holding off on it here to start. But it was one of those games where, as a Bruins fan, if you're watching it, I can understand if you're just so sickened by the whole thing. Like, you come out of there thinking, I don't even want to watch this product anymore. What a garage league. I can't believe this is happening. I wasn't here for the Cam Neely, old Samuelson sequence, but I'm sure there were some similar feelings at that time. But it is amazing to see that third period call. And the poll question we had up on the morning show was, all right, what is Kelly Sutherland thinking? What's going on in his brain? Was it A, total incompetence? B, there's some sort of a reaction to the Corrali flop, if you want to call it a flop, or is there something deeper going on in here, i.e. an anti-Boston bias? Is there just a gun shyness? I think that would be another one to put in there. Are all these refs just afraid to call anything when they look at it, now based on some of the miscues earlier in the postseason? So,
well, my question is, why haven't these officials been pulled from the series? Because
Have they not? Well, they're not going to ref tonight, right? There's two...
Okay.
Sets of officials that have been alternating anyway.
But, I mean, those guys shouldn't work again in the series.
That goes without saying, yes. I mean, that would be unbelievable if they put them back out there for Game 7 Wednesday night.
I mean, you look at the officials have been pulled from the playoffs twice, which was the five-minute major against Cody Eakin and the Sharks Golden Knights.
Which, for people that forget the particulars now, this is a cross-check off a face-off. Eakin deserved two. They gave him five, based on Pavelski hitting the ice and blood and, like, the reaction of the whole thing, right? They give him a five-minute major, and then Vegas gets scored on four times because of the major, which you could say, don't give up four goals on a major penalty.
Should have been in that position but in the first place.
Right, so it's a terrible call, and Vegas has every right to bitch.
The other one was the hand pass. Those officials were removed from the playoffs as well.
And the other one, really, the McKinnon in Colorado got screwed on a technicality replay, the Avalanche.
That was more
but
the
it's not
rule
officiating,
being stupid.
Yes, right.
And, you know, the hand pass is, I think, just as bad as the tripping call that led to the game-winning goal. So those officials should not work again in the series.
And they haven't. I mean, so there have been two sets of officials that have been pulled.
Yeah,
but you're saying, but so,
right.
Kelly Sutherland and...
what's the other one? I don't know.
Steve Cazare. Well, the two guys. Now, Cazare, I think, is the one who missed the Barbashev hit. And obviously, Kelly Sutherland is the guy directly behind the play, looking directly at the
right.
trip.
There's no excuse for, like, maybe he didn't see it. You can see he's clearly looking at the play. The puck's right there. There's no excuse to miss that. So, yeah, I mean, officiating has been... So what's your
answer of those poll question options? Incompetence? Bias?
Incompetence.
There's no bias. There's nothing going on here. There's no...
I think that there's a... After Berube's comments, I think that it was definitely a shift in officiating, and I think that there was more of a... I don't know if you want to say gun-shy, but I think that there was a... more of an awareness of the Blues are getting called too much, and I think that they gave the Blues some more calls, but I think that the tripping call was more of just incompetence.
Would it be really shocking, though? Like, Paul Stewart was on with Dalen Keefe and he got upset at this notion, but would it be that surprising that the officials would approach, like, Stephen Walkham? I don't know if Bettman would be involved, but the head of officiating would come to his crew and say, look, we don't want to be the story. We were the story in the Vegas series. Let's dial it back. Let's let these guys decide it. And then after game three, where the Bruins win 7-2 and there's all these penalties and Berube's yapping, they then kind of recheck themselves and say, you know what, let's back off a little bit. Let's call it it's egregious. No official wants to say we call it differently in the playoffs than we do in the regular season, but we see it all the time. It happens.
Yeah.
Naturally, you want to let the players decide things on the ice. And that mentality, if that's what's happening, benefits St. Louis, plain and simple, because they're just a better 5-on-5 team, unfortunately for Boston.
Right.
I mean, that's partly their fault that they're flawed in that way, but Boston is a much superior special teams on both sides of it through the series. So if that's the case, it's an anti-Boston bias, intentionally or unintentionally, that's crept into the series.
Yeah, I guess you say the Bruins special teams so good that it's been a detractor because the officials don't want to be the story.
Right, bad year for you to be relying on your special teams. Terrible year for it.
The special teams have been so good that the officials don't want it to be the story, so they're calling less for the Bruins. And I don't want to say that the Bruins are losing in the series because of officiating, because they've been the worst team at 5-on-5. And that was sort of the way that I approached my takeaways from game five, is that, yeah, you got screwed, but also you did not deserve to win that game. So,
but yeah, you can say that, and it's a 1-0 game, and without that call,
right, it's 1-0, and you're put on the power play in the third period.
A very realistic chance you tie the game, and that game goes to overtime, and at that point, it's a coin flip. I mean, they weren't getting that severely outplayed. I guess they were. They had a good first period, and they had a bad 30-ish minutes afterwards.
Well, they were getting severely outplayed at that point where the trip happened.
They were.
They started to turn it on after that. So, you know,
How many times have we seen that with the Bruins in this playoff run and past years with this core, where they turn it on in the last five to ten minutes?
If you get put on the power play,
yep,
there's a great opportunity there. I mean, I know the power play wasn't playing great in game five, but I mean, you get put on the power play in a one goal game, and you're right back in it.
So you can say, I don't want to whine about officiating, but if I'm a Bruins fan, I don't want to let the officiating off the hook and say, oh, well, the Blues were the better team. There's a very realistic statement you can make to say, we got screwed. We probably had every chance to win that game. And this series is now 3-2 in Boston's favor. So to me, by all means, whine about the officiating. You got totally hosed. And every official and former official agrees with it.
Yeah, no. So, there were three egregious calls in that game five that really stood out, or non-calls. It was the hit on Johansson, the holding call that didn't happen on Krug, which was ridiculous, and then obviously the trip. And so there were three ones that really stood out where you can say they got hosed.
Absolutely. Now, can you come back from that and play against not only St. Louis but the officiating tonight in whatever form it's going to show itself? That would be quite a story for Boston to overcome that and win a cup and go through that adversity. That's what they face going into Game 6 tonight. We want your thoughts on it. 617-779-7937. Freddie in New Hampshire is lined up. We'll get Fred's thoughts coming up next. We will have Matt Kalman on the line from Logan. He'll check in with some final thoughts. Pete has drastic line combinations. He is juggling everything up tonight. He is panicking, basically. He's in total panic mode. And he is working on getting unblocked by Kevin Paul DuPont. We're hoping by the end of the show it happens. It's been, a two-year run?
More than that. I think it's been like 4 or 5 years.
All right. The olive branch has been extended.
Yep.
And we'll see if Dupes responds. We're waiting very patiently for that. Some great columns out there. Snack bar guy had he dug deep today and really
harder
pushed
the
envelope.
Puck.
Yep. And Tara Sullivan as well from the Globe. So we'll give you some of the storylines around the local media. This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEI.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling. My size is always out of stock and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And in the situation, everybody's giving Berube all this credit that, his mouth has turned the tide. I can promise you, and I know these guys, the referees, and I'm not exonerating them or whitewashing this whole thing, but I think in the sense that that goes about as far as reading the paper and then flipping it into the trash, because it really doesn't mean much to the guys on the ice.
Disagree. Paul Stewart has reffed a lot more games than I have. Berube's made an impact on the series. He's done a great job with tactical moves, and he has worked the officials magically. And Mike Milbury said this before game four even happened, Pete. I'm going to give him credit. Pete Black from CBS Sports. We'll get Matt Kalman on the line later. But he said, if I'm Bruce Cassidy, I hear that from Berube, I am in the official's office, and I am letting them hear, hey, this guy, don't listen to what this guy is saying. Let's go through the, you know, the facts of what's happened. I don't know if that happened or didn't happen, but I would guess it didn't. I would guess Milbury had a right instinct, and I think Cassidy it's two games too late, his politicking in this series. Berube has made a difference.
Absolutely, he's made a difference. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, and the audacity of that guy to say after game five, well, I'm not here to judge the officials. Are you absolutely kidding me?
That was good trolling. That was really good trolling, actually.
It was a great troll. I mean, there's absolutely no question in my mind that this officiating flipped after his comments. So,
and as Tara Sullivan says, whining in the Stanley Cup final should not have an effect on winning. How's that for a headline? Whining should not have an effect on winning. So, talking about the Bozak non-call, Tripgate, as Kalman calls it, and if they lose this series, of course, it's going to be talked about for a long time in New England, but there's a chance it doesn't happen. Looking back to 2011 in Game 6, the headline in the Globe after that win at the Garden, unyielding Bruins roar back. 5-2 win for the Bees in Game 6. Four goals in like a four-minute span of the first period. Roberto Luongo chased. Doesn't have to go down in history that way. We don't have to remember the Bozak call if the Bruins take care of business on the ice tonight. There's my motivational speech for you.
There you go.
But Fred in New Hampshire, I'm sure, is going to be bringing it this morning, and he's got the platform right now. Freddie, good morning.
Ken, Pete, morning.
Morning.
Hey, I don't want to talk about that non-call ever again, but, you know, yesterday I'm watching the NHL Network, and Stu Grimson had the nerve to say that the Bruins player embellished the call.
I've seen that multiple times.
Jerry Callahan said that.
You want to go on concussion protocol to embellish a call? Come on, people. I mean, the nerve he has to say that.
I mean, it's extremely difficult to embellish a trip from behind. You don't see it coming. It's very hard to really embellish that.
Yeah, Stu. You know, Stu should go on construction protocol so they can rebuild his brain. I mean, what do you think would have happened if Marchand's the person who did that? You think he'd be playing today?
Oh, he'd be out of the series. Right.
So, it's a travesty. But, you know, the towns of Haverhill, Hammond's Place, and Lassery, Lorette, they didn't raise any quitters. They're going to step up today. They'll step up big time. This isn't over, and it's not going to go down this way. And the last thing I want to say, anybody that thought Chara wasn't coming back from a broken jaw, anybody that even, they're not watching this game. He's not going to, it was the fifth game of the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you think if his arm was broken, he still would have played? The guy is a beast, and we are so lucky to have him on the Bruins. Take care, guys.
All right, Freddie. Hang in there, buddy. Game 7 is Wednesday. Stu Grimson will be notified of your shot across the bow. Fred V. Stu
Grimson. I only got one Budweiser left. So you know what's happening on Wednesday.
Uh-oh.
A lot of day drinking.
Ooh, see you, buddy.
Fred has been a weekly caller in the show for years.
Hasn't missed.
I think that his best line of all time is
construction protocol.
Unbelievable.
All right. Maria in Watertown, one of our other staples, is hot as well. We're going to give her some time on the other side of the top hour ID, if you will. And Pete Blackburn said something right before we came back, which is mind-blowing. Okay, is this a Christian Fourier-esque report? I don't want you to give it now. I'm going to tease this. Okay. Are you sure you want to give this report? Because if it's true,
I'll say it's what I've heard.
All right, this could be a bombshell if this is the truth. Now, I'm based on the way Pete delivered it to me, I'm not sure it's well-sourced or obviously you haven't put it on print or anywhere yet.
No.
But it's the talk show. It's worth, I think, exploring the possibilities. You're going to want to hear this coming up from Pete Blackburn. Hour 2 Sunday Skate, Sports Radio, WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.